from the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean. Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, supernatural stories. Here's what's happening. Tragedy in the Middle East. 19 people, including 17 foreign tourists, have been killed in a gun attack on the Bardo Museum in Tunisia's capital of Tunis. Those killed included citizens from Japan, Italy, Colombia, Australia, France, Poland, and Spain. Two Tunisians, one police officer, also killed. Security forces killed two gunmen searching the surrounding area for a compliment. Jeez, just unbelievable story there of hatred again. Target Corporation has agreed to pay $10 million in a proposed settlement of a class action lawsuit. Now, that was related to that huge 2013 data breach that consumers say compromised their personal financial information. Under the proposal, which will require federal court approval, Target will deposit the settlement amount into an interest-bearing escrow account. It'll pay individual victims up to $10,000 in damages. Now, the claims will be submitted and processed primarily online through a dedicated website, according to documents. A bipartisan pair of lawmakers, they've announced that they will introduce legislation to require all government entities, from a federal agency to a local police department, to apply for a special license from the Justice Department before it can fly drones. Currently, there are very few privacy limitations on how individuals and the government can use drones. Last month, the FAA proposed an initial set of rules for drone operators, but it only addressed safety concerns. Also, private investigators are using drones now in their business. One private investigator is Roger Tulsis. Roger, what do you think of the use of drones in your field?
I'll tell you, George, I think that they can be a real problem if you're attempting to get really close to somebody, because these have electric motor engines. Mm-hmm. The fans are loud if you got four or six of them running at one time. So this is not a situation where you're going to fly this by somebody's window 5 feet outside the window and have it hover to listen to conversations or shoot photographs past, through somebody's window that close up. They may have merit as far as shooting from a distance, a mile, a half mile away with a telephoto lens to look at the movement of automobiles and that kind of thing, but they're far, far away from being able to take close-up pictures and that kind of thing without being discovered just by the virtue of the noise.
Are they trying to get drones to replace actual physical private investigators, Raj?
I don't think so, not at this point. I think they're a tool, but once again, most of the time you'd have to be fairly far away from the individual that you're monitoring because of the if it's daylight, you're going to see the thing flying, and secondarily, once again, they do make a whirring sound, and the bigger the drone, the more the noise. So, next thing you know, if the people see these things flying around, that's going to blow your case in terms of them knowing that they're under surveillance. So you run that risk as well.
Roger's website, bugsweeps.com. Thanks, Raj. The Federal Reserve opened the door to an interest rate increase as soon as June, while also indicating it will go slow once it gets started. A lot of people are a little concerned that interest rates are going to start going back up again. In Idaho, some 2,000 migrating snow geese have simply died, many of them just falling out of the skies in eastern Idaho. They think likely from a disease that comes on quickly and then can kill those birds in mid-flight. The Idaho Department of Fish and Game says staff and volunteers collected the dead birds over the past several days all over the area. The cause of death likely was an avian cholera, which can cause convulsions and erratic flight behavior. A priest has been arrested in Spain for performing repeated exorcisms on an underage girl suffering from anorexia. And a judge has called for the arrest of the exorcist along with that priest after she went through 13 exorcisms while still being a minor. Well, the USGS has released a new California earthquake forecast, and the new report slightly raises the likelihood of a big earthquake over the next several decades. Cal Ori, the author of The Man Who Predicts Earthquakes, all about Jim Berkland. Cal, we've both been saying we expect a big one on the West Coast. They're talking decades. I think it's going to be sooner than that, don't you?
Yeah, I saw that. That was quite surprising. Tonight, I just discovered, I can't believe how I passed this up, but on March 20th, we have the supermoon.
That's right.
Full moon, the solar eclipse, and the spring equinox. They're all lining up, and if you go on the internet, a lot of earthquake sensitives and a lot of forecasters are sensing something big is going to happen in the upcoming days. The last time this happened, what I read, is that January 10th, the same thing happened, and then prior to that, in 2004, December 26th, we had the 9.0 quake tsunami in the Indian Ocean. Plus March 11th, Japan, remember we had the 9 point whatever, mm-hmm, and all the tsunamis, and then March 27th, the Great Alaska quake in 1964. And then to make it even more fun, I am leaving California Friday on March 20th. I'm going up to the Cascadia subduction zone. Is that fun or what?
For you, it is.
A little bit on edge.
Well, we shall see what happens, Cal. Thanks so much. Ringo Starr is going to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame by Sir Paul McCartney. Starr is the last of the Beatles to receive this incredible honor. Sir Paul will usher in the 74-year-old at the 30th annual ceremony at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Museum next month. That's a great honor. Well, spring is Friday, but what does that mean? You know, we're going to talk climate in a moment with Joseph Olson next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Controversial as it is, as we talk about climate change, you know, I'm one of those who believe we're in an Earth cycle. The planet goes through these cycles. Some people say, no, this is caused by greenhouse gases. Mankind is doing all this. Let's check in with Joseph Olson. Joseph, of course, civil engineer for more than 30 years. He's worked with Dr. Tim Ball, a guest on this program, and other scientists debunking the greenhouse gas theory. The book, Slaying the Sky Dragon, Death of the Greenhouse Gas Theory. Joseph, welcome to the program. Good to have you with us tonight.
Oh, George, I'm totally delighted. Yeah, me and my PhD homies are here to take Al Gore's Nobel Prize and his Academy Award away from him. So that's what we're going to do in the next 2 hours.
And Joseph, why is this subject so emotional? I mean, this is one of those topics where people don't just discuss it; they scream it, they yell at you. Why?
Well, it's been framed as an emotional issue because that's the easiest way to hurt people that are not objective. And so if you're not objective and you're not informed, it's like, you know, the sky is falling, an acorn hits you on the head, so let's all run and hide in a cave with the fox and make a nice chicken dinner. It's absurd.
Let's talk a little bit about Slaying the Sky Dragon. Tell me a little bit about how this came about.
All of the authors had been writing on blog sites worldwide, and there was no coordinated effort against the two dichotomy that I'm convinced are operating simultaneously. As a strange coincidence, Jerome Corsi was in town, who's also been a guest on Coast to Coast last night, and I heard him speak, and he was talking about how the CIA always works both sides of the game. And I think that what we have now is a completely staged debate, and that they're arguing about minor differences in the same thing. But the authors of Slaying the Sky Dragon had all taken a more technical approach and were using classical thermodynamics and first principles, and we were arguing, but we were lost in the echo chamber. So we, one of the guys, John Sullivan, contacted authors. We're from eight authors from five different countries. At the time our book was published, only two of us had ever met. And so it's a completely internet-generated research project. And I think it's very coherent.
And did you all agree on climate change?
We all agreed on the principles of thermodynamics overriding the principles of back radiation warming and carbon forcing. Yes, there was no disagreement, and hasn't been to date on any of that.
Now let's talk a little bit about thermodynamics, if we can, Joseph. First of all, give us your definition of it. It, of course, the laws of thermodynamics, but what are they?
Well, you have three laws of thermodynamics, and we'll leave it to people to look them up on their own. But I can just tell you that if you're doing a heat transfer equation, the heat transfer equation is the mass, the specific heat, and the temperature difference. And what they have done by framing the argument the way they have is that they're trying to convince you that what happens is the atmosphere is the only thing that's involved in climate, when actually the atmosphere is the final trailing artifact from all total energy flows. And so over 98% of the mass of the solar, our Mickey Mouse little solar system, is our sun, and it is 5,800 degrees Fahrenheit. Depending, it seems like they adjust that number on a regular basis too. But anyhow, it's definitely the major energy source. But Earth has an additional internal energy source, and both of the energy sources are variable, and their effect on the climate is buffered by systems that the planet has that we'll discuss when we get a little bit further into it.
Joseph, how constant is the temperature on the sun?
The actual solar output is within about 1 or 2%, and that's why they call it a solar constant. But the Earth rotates in a 3 million mile different radius. So we're on an elliptical orbit around the sun, so our distance from the sun varies, and the energy that we get from the sun due to that distance change is a function of the square of distance. So a 3% difference in your distance from the sun will cause about a 10% in your total insulation. That's covered partly by the axis of inclination, so that at our current cycle, the southern part of the hemisphere is facing the sun during the closest orbit to the sun, and that happens to be mostly ocean. And back in 1914, a civil engineer from Serbia named Malkovich developed the astronomical theory of ice ages, and that's one of the other things that has absolutely no input from human or atmospheric, natural atmospheric carbon dioxide either, is that, you know, the orbits of the planet are completely independent of whether we're putting carbon dioxide in the air or not. So that's one factor that affects our, and those are demonstrated cycles.
When did Slaying the Dragon come up? Was that in 2011?
No, it actually came out on Thanksgiving Day on 2010, and there's an interesting story with that. One of the co-authors is Dr. Klaus Johnson. He teaches a course called Numerical Methods. He's a applied mathematics professor, PhD, at the Royal Institute of Technology in Stockholm. And the day our book came out, he was censored by the university, and they said, do not teach the formula that's in that book to your students because it proves that global warming doesn't work. And thermodynamics was codified in the 1870s, and so engineers had been using these formulas for 140 years, and now one of the major groups that's responsible for awarding Nobel Prizes in science censors a college professor from teaching a math formula. So that tells you how entrenched the people at the top of the pyramid are in making this false paradigm reality work.
How did they even know about it so quickly in order to jump on him?
Once the book was out, it was within hours. It came out in Europe, and then the very next day, he had a post up at his website which had pictures of Nazis throwing big books onto burning fires and saying, you know, is this what we have for science nowadays? His article is really interesting. I wrote an article at Canada Free Press about a week or two later because I was following other items at the time. My article is called Climate Warfare Rules of Engagement, and it has a link back to his site. So if you go to Canada Free Press, I've actually got 60 articles at Canada Free Press. And I want to thank editor Judy McCloy for graciously putting my work up and keeping it up in archive.
Well, with Joseph Olson, of course, one of the authors of Slaying the Sky Dragon. Joseph, those who support global warming, climate change, what did they present as evidence, as fact, in order to back up their thoughts?
As far as I'm concerned, they don't have anything in the way of fact. It's just root indoctrination. They can't point to a single experiment that shows that it works. In response to our book coming out, we realized that eight guys with a book, even if it was in several languages, was not going to affect the debate at all. So we created a science society called Principal Scientific International, and we currently have 350 members. Early on, back in, I think it was February of 2011, one of our members, a PhD scientist from University of Monterrey in Mexico, did an experiment where he measured the actual amount of back radiation energy coming into the Earth, and it virtually doesn't exist. And his paper was peer-reviewed by our staff, and it's been published and put up on our website under the Publications tab. And I recommend everything on the Publications tab because it's excellent. One of the other contributors at Principal Scientific is a PhD chemical engineer, Dr. Pierre Latour. Pierre Latour was a major in the U.S. Army assigned to the Apollo missions. He holds multiple patents in refinery control processes. In a refinery, carbon dioxide is both a reactant and a byproduct. And so if it's a byproduct that you don't want, you have to know how to detect it and how to get it out. And if it's a reactant, you have to know how it combines with other elements and other molecules in reactions that far exceed anything inside the atmosphere. And we had a little go-around with one of the people. I was actually the person who coined the term lukewarmist. And
I like
that happened when Discover Magazine had a fake debate between Dr. Judith Curry and Dr. Michael Mann. And they just went on and on about, well, it warms a whole bunch. No, it just warms a little. And the specific heat of carbon dioxide is 0.8, which means it heats and cools faster than standard air. So, and no gas molecule can store energy. What a gas molecule does is if it happens to be in the right frequency range, a gas molecule will vibrate to certain frequencies. It's just like taking a tuning fork into a concert. You can hold it up and certain frequencies will make that tuning fork vibrate. But if you held up 1,000 tuning forks in a concert, you're not going to amplify the sound in the concert hall.
No.
So, and you're not amplifying the energy that's coming in or leaving the Earth with the gases there. What happens is that it absorbs, but anything that absorbs also emits. So within a billionth of a second, the energy that's absorbed kicks an electron further out in the orbit, and that's a kinetic energy. Now, by the laws of conservation of energy, the photon that hit the gas molecule will be released, but it will be a lower energy, longer wavelength photon, and the vibrational energy that was contained by the CO2 molecule is immediately transferred to the adjoining non-absorbing molecules of oxygen and nitrogen and forms a convective wave and goes up to the surface of the Earth, and that's where you get the bump in the temperature of the thermosphere. But we're getting a little bit technical for people that are just
not non-scientists and climatologists, that's for sure. But that's okay. We'll get a better understanding on this. And it's happening. Isn't the solar system warming up, the planets in our solar system?
Yes. They've had consistent warming on all of the planets, reduced ice cover on the polar caps of certain planets and moons. And so, yes, we have no control over what the sun does, and your carbon emissions have absolutely no control over it all.
We're going to come back with you. We're going to come back with you in a second, Joseph. We're at the break. his book, Slaying the Sky Dragon, Death of the Greenhouse Gas Theory. We'll be back. Welcome back with Joseph Olson as we talk about his work, Slaying the Sky Dragon, Death of the Greenhouse Gas Theory. Joseph, were you always a believer in, of course, the natural global warming or climate change?
Yes, because it's obvious that, and there's so many different parallel paths that tell you that. There's a great chart online. It's global temperatures 2500 BC to 2040 AD, and it's by climatologist Cliff Harris and meteorologist Randy Mann. And it shows the cyclic nature of temperature. And in the last 4,500 years, we've had three very warm periods, warm by about 5 degrees more than normal, which is shows you how delicate the balance is on the planet.
That's right.
But that was the Minoan warming period, the Roman warming period, and the medieval warming period. And during those periods, the Vikings occupied Greenland and built stone dairy barns big enough to hold 50 cows. And they left discrete artifacts from that particular era of their culture. And then they were driven out by the Grecian cold era, the Dark Ages, and the Little Ice Ages. And so they abandoned Greenland during all of those periods. In Greenland today, those stone dairy barns are still under ice. So we haven't even gotten back up to where the warmth was before. When the Romans invaded England in 49 AD, they were growing grapes as far north as Hadrian's Wall at the border with Scotland. And now you can't grow grapes anywhere in England. So, you know, you've had these global cyclic changes. I heard your interview with Graham Hancock many moons ago when he first came out with Underworld about how the oceans were 440 feet lower and that all of the coastal cities had been swamped and that there was a 3 mile high ice cap all over Canada. So I've been very well aware of that. I remember from Believe It or Not back in the 60s, they had a thing about frozen mammoths that were frozen standing up in Siberia. Well, that's a climate change that you're not going to explain 10,000 years ago with human carbon dioxide emissions. So definitely there's anomalies that happen, and there's definitely cycles. And I have no difficulty at all with the Mount Milankovitch theory of ice ages.
Well, there's so many people who are now beginning to believe that we might be in the beginning stages, Joseph, of an ice age. Not just warming anymore, but an actual ice age. What do you think of that?
I've heard your guest, Robert Felix, on that subject.
That's
many
him.
Times. And there's a lot of compelling evidence. Actually, if you look at that chart that I mentioned previously with the Harris-Mann chart, you'll see that we're probably due for another cold spell. We just got to hope that it's a short one and not a long one, because the last major glacial period we had was 100,000 years.
Well, look what happened this winter. I mean, 9 feet of snow in the Boston area, 9 feet.
We've broken the ice record on frozen coverage on Great Lakes for the first time in 50 years of recorded history. The average is 51% ice coverage. In 1979, they had 94% ice coverage. Last year, they had 91%, and we've broken the record now. So, you know, and so either you've got a cyclic variation in the freezing point of water, or we've got cyclic temperatures, and I kind of go with the temperature thing.
And, Joseph, you believe that there are a lot of lies out there tied into, of course, carbon climates and the like. How come?
Well, it's more than convenient that they tell us that we've got finite amount of carbon fuels available, and that, you know, because it's just leftover dead dinosaurs, and so we've got to conserve, and we can't be drilling any new oil, and blah, blah, blah. Okay, that's one side of it. Then the next side is, well, we've got to have all these alternative energies. Well, guess what? All the alternative energy companies are owned by insiders, and no alternative energy system developed to date can produce more energy than it takes to than it takes to create it. So if you're making biofuels, you're producing an 80,000 BTU per gallon ethanol using 100 8,000 BTUs of fertilizer and irrigation and refining and processing to add to 110,000 BTU per gallon gasoline to reduce your mileage and ruin your engine. Now, how brilliant is that? We have one-third of America's cropland is being wasted producing something that is valueless as far as an energy product.
So where do we stand? I mean, how do you convince people, you know, folks, this is a planetary change here based on a solar system, based on the internal workings of the planet? How do you convince them that?
Well, we're going to do a little bit more in the science part of it. Next thing that I want to talk about is the solar irradiation spectrum.
Explain that.
You can pick up this chart online. You have a Planck's curve, which is the amount of energy that comes off of any body in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
A human being has 98.6 degree body temperature. You release infrared energy in the 10 micron range. Earth carbon dioxide absorbs in three discrete ranges of infrared energy, and that's it. And two of those ranges of energy are 800 degrees and 400 degree temperature range. So those energy bands can only be absorbed by solar radiation. The Earth only gets hot enough to absorb in one band. So just from simple logic, if you can absorb three bands of incoming energy and you only absorb one band of outgoing energy, more CO2 is going to cause more cooling. So that's one fact. The next thing is every band of absorption that CO2 has is also a band that water vapor has. Well, guess what? Water vapor has 50,000 absorption bands. And so they had to say that water vapor was a warming gas because water vapor absorbs in all three of the bands that carbon dioxide absorbs in. But what happens when sunshine hits an ocean? It causes evaporation. That's latent heat of evaporation is taking heat away from the ocean. It removes it up high in the atmosphere. At that point, it condenses, and that's latent heat of condensation. It's releasing that energy and turning back into water droplets. Those water droplets become clouds. Clouds end up reflecting and blocking the sun. You can look this up on Wiki. It's real simple. Average thunderstorm has 10 to the 15 joules of energy, weighs 15 times 10 to the 8 kilograms, which is 16,500 tons. It's held aloft by massive updrafts of air that are holding the water vapor in suspension. But the only way it does it is by having enormous vertical shear of energy that's pulling air up and running it through the center of the cloud. Eventually, it ends up dropping cooling rain, freezing hail, sleet, or snow. And at any time on Earth, there's 1,800 average thunderstorms, which is over 16 million thunderstorms a year. And why do they tell us that water vapor is a warming gas when it's obvious that when a cloud goes by, it's cooler? It's obvious when rain falls on you, it's not real hot. It's obvious when hail, sleet, and snow fall on you, it's not real hot. And all of those things fall back to the Earth and cool the Earth. So let's give up the greenhouse gas is a complete fabrication. Greenhouses don't even work that way. A greenhouse works by blocking convective currents. You keep the heat in the greenhouse, not because the glass is bouncing radiant energy back inside. Glass is impervious to radiant energy. If you took a solid surface can reflect radiant energy. So if you have a radiant heater and you put a metal shield behind it or you put a mirror behind it or whatever, you can reflect radiant energy with a solid surface, but you can't reflect it with a gas. And you can't amplify it, you can't store it, and you can't even really redirect it. And those are all claims that the climate alchemists make, which are all wrong. And they have maintained a debate by saying it warms a whole lot, and the other side is, oh, it only warms a little. Well, the real answer is it warms zero. I simplify by saying we have the Darth big warmest, the Luke little warmest, and the Obi no warmest. Hmm. And me and the Slayers and the guys at Principal Scientific are the no warmest.
How much money is involved, Joseph? How much money is involved with those people who believe in climate global warming?
Well, the U.S. government has squandered $160 billion since George Bush was president. The climate spending was about $20 million a year under Reagan, and then it ramped up during the 4 years of Big Bush to $1 billion per year. All of that excess funding was for carbon endangerment findings. And if all you fund is findings for danger, danger is all you will find. And that's why we have everything in the world is, you know, increased in prostitution. You know, the polar bears are dying, the ice caps, the glaciers, the, you know, malaria is spreading. You know, everything they could possibly come up with, if it said carbon forcing, that's how you got your grant money. So that part of it, the academia part of it, but then we've squandered trillions in shutting down electrical generation plants, in these goofy alternative energies. A simple thing is solar cells. They go, oh man, solar cells are photovoltaics. We could power the whole world with that. Well, the average solar cell produces about 1 watt per square foot at 1.5 volts of direct current. And a horsepower is 780 watts. So if you wanted to have 1 horsepower out of a solar cell, you'd have to have 700 square feet of solar cell. And then you'd only get power for a couple hours a day. How are you going to dig up all of the silicon that it takes to make the cubic crystalline silicon structure and all the boron and phosphorus and the glass that it takes, the silicon dioxide that you use to make the glass on it? How are you going to mine and refine and process all those if you're only operating 4 hours a day on a watt per square foot of electricity? A solar cell doesn't make probably in its lifetime 20-25% of the energy it takes to create a solar cell.
So where's it all headed? I mean, how does this end, or does it?
I'm a big believer in the sudden awareness factor. When the Berlin Wall fell, I knew that it had absolutely nothing to do with Ronnie Reagan's massive defense spending, and we're going to drive them to bankruptcy because they won't be able to keep up with our arms sales. It had to do with information. Communism never worked except at the end of a barrel of a gun. And when the people of Hungary revolted in 1956, and when the people in Czechoslovakia revolted in 1968, the government owned all the printing presses, they owned all the broadcast media, they owned all of the means of communication, film developing, monitored all phone calls. Every typewriter was registered, and the most you could do with a typewriter was 6 carbon copies. And so they were able to come in and crush the people repeatedly. Well, during the 80s, they were falling so far behind the West in every means of production that they had to start allowing pro-printers and Xerox machines and satellite uplinks. And
real technology. They needed it.
They had to allow people to have their own means of communication because it just couldn't all be centrally managed. And when they lost control of communication, all of a sudden the Poles said, well, wait a minute. They're not going to pull the same stunt they did on Hungary and Czechoslovakia because the world can see us now. And so when the Poles said, we ain't going to work on Maggie's farm no more, the Russians said, well, hey, we got 40,000 tanks, say you are, and they rolled up to the border, and next thing you know, there was satellite uplinks and beta cams, and the West was going, holy cow, look what's going on over there. And the Russians balked, and when they did, the East Germans looked over and said, hey, we can do that. And it swept all the way across the world and got all the way to Tiananmen Square, and guess what? We would have had universal democracy in 1990 when Tiananmen Square happened had George Bush said, this is what's best for the world. Instead, he got the red Chinese off and he said, look, these guys are going to overthrow you unless you do what we tell you to do. And we'll take our American 401k and we'll invest it in your country and we'll substitute your iron rice bowl and give that to America and we'll ship all of our industry and we'll build you a nation so that we can have the three-axis Orwellian Oceania, East Asia, and Eurasia that these people have been dreaming about. And it's no coincidence that Hitler, the Nazi miracle between 32 and 39, happened with over $100 million of U.S. capital, and Prescott Bush was one of the principal money bundlers.
And I think Henry Ford was part of that too, wasn't he?
Well, Ford had a different reason for doing it. Ford was being pressured by the Eastern bankers because he was running his operation completely independent of the Eastern bankers.
Right, right.
And
he didn't need them.
Yeah, when the monopolists wouldn't sell him iron from Pennsylvania, he went and dug up iron in Minnesota and Michigan. And when they wouldn't sell him coal, he went and dug up coal. And so he had a self-sustaining operation, and they couldn't bankrupt him. They couldn't force him into debt. This all goes back, if you want to see the simple facts of reality that are never taught to you in school, watch the video, All Wars Are Bankers' Wars. And to let you know, that's the hidden hand. That's what they don't want you to know. And that's behind all this global warming stuff, the peak oil, the green energy. It's all related.
With what's happening now with the climate, storms get stronger, tornadoes get bigger, hurricanes get bigger. Why? Why is that happening?
Actually, all of those things are mimes that they put out, and every one of those is false. And I didn't bring the reference information on that, but that's easily debunked. Heartland has a good analysis of all of those. And they show the insurance records. We haven't had a hurricane in the United States since, I think, Ike was the last major landfall hurricane in the United States, 7 years ago?
We've been lucky.
Yeah, well, we've had the longest spell.
But the intensity, though, Joseph, the intensity of these storms is huge. My question is what's causing them?
First of all, I don't accept that as fact. And second of all, it wouldn't be carbon dioxide. So whatever is causing it, if it is happening, is not carbon dioxide. But
I mean, we are getting big storms. There's no doubt about that.
Well,
I mean, look at the winter we just had.
We're looking at a real small window of time on a planet that's 4 billion years old. I mean, you know, the biggest storm is probably something that none of us ever witnessed. You read The Underworld and the storms that Graham Hancock describes that our forefathers went through, he says that there was probably an ice dam that broke in Canada with a huge pool of water that was sitting on top of it, and that sea levels could have risen worldwide 10, 15 feet in a day.
Just because of that?
Just because of that one event. And that's just the rise in sea level. The areas that were impacted by the wave that created that sea level change were enormous. They've got giant canyons up in Oregon that were carved by breaking ice dams.
Is the push for man-made climate change still there, or are they backing down?
Well, what they've done is they've managed to maintain this static debate between the Darth Big Warmest and the Luke Little Warmest long enough that what they're really doing is just making an excuse so that they can continue to chemtrail us, and so that the people that are involved in the chemtrail programming can say, well, we're doing this for the good of the planet because we know carbon dioxide is doing something. And so even if it's not a whole lot, we're still saving the planet. So the people that are involved in that are either covert operatives and just don't care about the rest of the planet, or they're robots, or they're people that deep down think that, well, as long as there's still debate about it and they're telling me to fly and spray these chemicals, then that's fine. I'll keep doing it.
Joseph, we're going to come back and take phone calls with you next as we talk about your work, Slaying the Sky Dragon, that he wrote with a number of other co-authors. We'll be back.